Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. The government has finally agreed a Brexit position, or has it? The Daily Telegraph today reports that the backstop position, if Theresa May can't come to any agreement with the EU, is that we'll effectively stay in the customs union by applying the common external tariff. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Katie Bowles and James Forsyth to discuss. So, James, this is a backstop, but is increasingly likely to be used given that the government doesn't even know what to ask the EU for. So it's beginning to look as if the backstop is becoming plan A, is it?
So the EU wants to say that the backstop applies to Northern Ireland. The UK government wants to say, oh, no, actually, the backstop applies to the whole of the UK. And there are some quite senior people in government who find the backstop quite attractive, because if you think the UK's aim in this is to essentially stay in the single market for goods, but leave the rest of the single market, that's what the backstop kind of does. Now, but the problem with the backstop is, now, apart from the rule-taking problem on the single market front, the other problem with the backstop is it keeps you in the customs union, in effect, because you'd have to carry on applying, the whole of the UK would have to carry on applying the same common external tariff as the EU.
So we wouldn't be able to strike our own trade deals. There's no point in talking.
You wouldn't be able to strike any meaningful trade deal. Yes, it is a temporary measure. And I think the other point here is, you know, part of the big problem with the UK government's Brexit preparations is they haven't done them, if you see what I mean. That we are not in a position, I don't think anyone in government seriously thinks that we are actually would be in a position to leave the customs union on January the 1st, 2021, and start running an entirely new system. You know, there would have to be a massive amount of work to get that done and up and running, and that isn't there yet.
But James, is that necessarily the case? I mean, some Tories will say to you, well, we don't need to prepare for even a no deal situation, because Britain doesn't need to set up massive checks on the borders. We can just say, okay, we're a sovereign country, we can take in goods and services from the EU, and we choose not to check them. So you don't need an infrastructure to get to no deal. This is one argument that's put to me.
I am very dubious of this argument. I mean, I know that various people have advanced it. I think Chris Grayling said on Question Time that, you know, you just didn't need to check stuff. I think if you I'm not sure whether that is a politically viable option, right? Because there is a massive difference between intelligent-led enforcement, right? No sensible customs system checks every vehicle or container coming through it. It's an intelligence-led system. But if you basically say we're not checking anything, the first time that something bad gets into the country, right, the government then has a massive problem, which is, well, that's the consequence of your decision not to check. I mean, the other thing about customs is, if you take Dover as a kind of roll-on, roll-off port and Calais, both Dover and Calais need to be kind of working in tandem. Otherwise, you get a bottleneck, which is, we've seen with Operation Stack has already had to be this thing where they park the lorries down the motorway in Kent, right? That's already had to be deployed because of a strike in the port of Calais by French workers, right? So even if the UK was to say, right, we're not checking anything, if the European side, the other side of the channel, were insisting on checks because the UK was outside the customs union and there was no deal, that would have a massive knock-on effect on the UK.
Now, Katie, if even James here is getting cold feet about no deal, then I imagine Theresa May certainly would not have the gumption to say to the EU, well, if you don't like either of my options, then I'm going to walk away. But however, the question still arises. She needs to get Parliament to ratify something else. If Parliament doesn't, then no deal is the default. So where can you see this heading right now?
Well, I think the prospect of a no deal has been downplayed every time that you get to one of these landmark moments, such as the first stage of the Brexit negotiations. People think it seems less likely. I think there's still plenty of reasons it could happen. I think the customs union is one, the fact that it's not quite clear if she even has parliamentary approval for her ideas. And there's also the idea that if it is such a long drawn out process and we're going to have this, which I think is now called a time-limited goods arrangement, different than MaxFac and different than a customs partnership.
So this is a third option, is it?
This is the long run-up, basically. So after the transition period, we'd still technically be in something that resembles a customs union. But when the technology is then ready, you move on to the MaxFac version. Then you will have a lot of Conservatives start to say, look, we are going to be going into the next general election still in the EU in all but name. And is that something we can actually sell to our constituents? Because when you get to that stage, some people might start to say, let's look back at no deal. And then you have a lot of people say there are not adequate plans for that, not nearly enough to use it as a bargaining tool. I did have one cabinet minister say to me last week, there's actually more planning than you think. Though at the same time, given that this seems to be the minority view, I think perhaps that was a strong game in the hope that that's passed on.
Now, James, let's say Katie is right here in that the planning that has been done for no deal is insufficient and the government wouldn't do it. If it does stay to this time-limited customs arrangement, how bad would it be? Because surely, I mean, sure, some Tory Brexiteers might say, look, this is Brexit in name only, we haven't really left the EU. But we would have control over the borders, that's a major factor. We would have extricated ourselves from the EU apparatus of a decaying institution, that's another main goal of Brexiteers. We would have liberated ourselves from a lot, but by no means all, but probably 80% of the EU directives that were taking so much of government time. I mean, Steve Hilton says when he was number 10, he found out that a third of what they were doing there was not their own agenda, it was an EU agenda. That would still go. So, yes, you'd have a customs union, and that wouldn't be ideal. But you would still have several Brexit wins in the form of border control, in the form of being free of the apparatus, and being free of the directives. So that, surely, could be spun as a successful Brexit, or could it?
I think Katie hit the nail on the head when she said that the political danger is the sense of some, what one leading Brexiteer said to me today, half in despair, half jokingly, but the newspaper headlines the first day after the end of a transition period will be nothing has changed. And the reason they say that is they think that extending the customs union, this time-limited goods arrangement that Katie was talking about, only works if you continue to basically apply all of the single market rules.
Right. In other words, now, it's not the customs union itself, but it will effectively keep us in the single market.
There are three things that are customs, that cause for customs checks to exist. One is tariffs, one is rules of origin, and one is regulatory standards, right? So even if there are no tariffs, right, if you are not regulatorily compliant, you're not regulatory the same, you would still have to have checks. So the argument goes that you then have to have all this, and then the question you get into is, what does the EU start insisting on as regulation, right? This is one of the great British questions. Your argument in the question is premised on the idea that the EU would accept that the only regulations that the UK was bound by in this situation was kind of product standards rather than social standards, environmental standards, etc., etc., etc.
But that's the customs arrangement. That's what it means. External tariffs we're talking about.
But I've absolutely no doubt that in these circumstances, the EU would try to argue that a level playing field requires the UK to carry on applying everything else. And then you come back to, not to keep referring back to what Katie was saying, but you come back to Katie's point about no deal. If the UK can't use no deal, then you could get into a situation where the UK is in such a weak position that it feels it has to accept that these regulatory alignment also requires alignment on all these other things. You know, the great mistake that David Cameron made in the renegotiation was he thought that the EU was still as it was at the time when he was a spad in the Treasury in the Home Office, that there was the single market and then there was the social stuff and the environmental stuff. What happened in between 1997 and 2010 is those things basically all got merged together, deliberately designed so that you can't disentangle them.
So Katie, would any of these situations pass Parliament? I mean, let's say there was going to be, Theresa May did give way to the EU and wanting a time-limited customs agreement, which, as James says, might be a Trojan horse for all other means of keeping us in the EU. Would that get a vote?
I think a time-limited arrangement which leads to a max FAC option by which the Brexiters think they can get to where they want on trade, which, given the time limit, would perhaps reassure those in the more Remain side that you weren't going to have this cliff edge or friction, is probably Theresa May's best bet of getting it through Parliament. But even then, I don't think it's certain. And I think there is probably a parliamentary majority in terms of people who'd be happy with a customs partnership, which is the softer option and May's preferred option. But her big problem is I think there's a sizeable, or perhaps even a majority within her own party, who would not like that. And you'll start to see a very difficult situation for the Prime Minister and continuing with her party supporting her.
But James, nobody's seriously suggesting that she would lose a confidence vote. I'm trying to think of the options here. Right now, and especially in the next few weeks, we're going to hear a lot of Brexiteer Tories saying the party won't put up with this, the party won't put up with that. But really, unless the party can eject her as leader and defeat her in a leadership contest with all of the collateral damage that that will bring on these Tories and their chances of re-election, I think the Prime Minister might be in a stronger position than her detractors right now admit.
Yes, she is, because it's a very finely balanced hung parliament. So let's imagine in a Tory leadership contest, you had a situation where, you know, Anna Soubry and Dominic Grieve and that gang said, if X becomes leader, I won't follow the Tory whip. You basically, in that situation, you can essentially see the government, even in combination with the DUP, its majority fall away. That is the test. I think the big question is this, is up to now, the Brexiteers have been prepared to swallow things like a standstill transition to get to the eventual deal that they want. The question is, how much longer are they prepared to go on doing that? You know, Jacob Rees-Mogg kind of objection to this thing in the Telegraph today is, he basically says, like, well, when do we end doing this? When do we stop saying next year in Jerusalem? You know, that's when we're, you know, it's the government's Brexit position reminds me of that kind of Thomas Aquinas saying, you know, Lord, make me virtuous, but not yet. You know, when is it going to come? When will they actually be out? But I think Katie is right. If you could put a date on it and people believed that the Prime Minister sincerely meant it, which is one of the big challenges, the provisional arrangements weren't going to become permanent arrangements on the hush-hush, then I think you probably could get some time-limited thing that gave the Remainers the extra time and the Brexiteers Max Fack through.
I think Theresa May's position does look a lot stronger than the Brexiteers personally, because even if they decided to try and get a Brexit candidate, the only way they could have a working majority in the House would be to have an early election, I think. And for many Brexiteers, an early election is more dangerous to the concept of Brexit than sticking with Theresa May.
Katie and James, thanks very much indeed. This podcast is called Coffee House Shots. You can subscribe to it on the iTunes Store, and also do rate and even review us. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much for listening, and to Cindy Yu, who produced this podcast.